Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. One of the most often questions, the most often question I get asked traveling around the country talking about all of these important issues, it happens every day, every talk I give, is what can I do? And that's what I want to talk about today. And to do that, I have brought somebody on who I just am so excited to have. Brad, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I want to say I get that question too, but that's the second most popular question I get. The first most popular question is, I thought Andrew Seidel was going to be here. Where is he? Why are you here instead? So,
Get both of us. I mean, we're talking, this is like the ambitious crossover podcast that everybody's been clamoring for.
Yeah. I mean, I want to just say congrats on launching One Nation Indivisible. And, you know, as the leader of Axis Mundi Media, we are just like over the moon that you like said yes and are here and are doing your show and giving the people what they want. So, you know, we couldn't be like more stoked that you are part of the family now. And I was trying to think of like, you know, some really good buddy cop analogies that we could make about, yes. You know, you and I,
yes,
joining forces. But I think I've landed on the one that's most accurate, which is a movie from the late 80s, early 90s called Twins. And it was this movie where Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito were twins, but like through genetic mishaps, Arnold Schwarzenegger got all of the like good DNA and gene traits, and Danny DeVito was sort of... Well, I'm just saying, I think, you know, you're Andrew Seidel, you are the author of American Crusade, The Founding Myth, you are, you know, constitutional lawyer, and I'm just happy to be like, you know, hanging out, and Danny DeVito getting to like be your sidekick, you know, and get to be here. So I'm
yeah. I feel like it's got to be something more like a Lethal Weapon or a, like, it's like, what was that buddy cop movie with Wahlberg and Will Ferrell, something like that.
See, but this is I did this exercise, Andrew, and
you went through all of them.
One of us has to be Mel Gibson. Yeah, somebody's got to be Mel Gibson, which untouchable, yeah, at this point.
Yeah.
And then somebody has to be Mark Wahlberg, which, apologies to Mark Wahlberg, yeah, fans out there, but like he's literally just now in, he's like hawking a devotional book by the leader, the yeah, founder of Opus Dei.
Yeah.
So, we don't want to be Wahlberg. We don't want to be Gibson. It, you know, I'm sure people will send us some examples, but
yeah. I was thinking, we're going to ask for people's input at the end of this episode on things they think they can do after we give them a whole menu of options. But like, now I want to hear more from them on like what 1980s buddy movie is Weekend at Bernie's in the running? Like, is a Ferris Bueller? No, not Ferris Bueller. I want to hear from you. What is well, this?
I would rather be Danny DeVito, okay, than Cameron from Ferris, yeah, Bueller. I'm just saying, I will take Danny DeVito over that.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, one thing we could talk about doing is doing what the Democrats did the non-State of the Union, State of the Union, and doing color coordinated outfits in the face of fascism. I have found that people seem to think that's a little bit empty. That's not the kind of action that people necessarily are looking for in the current political climate. And I think there's some fair frustration. There is a really rich history of activism. You know, you and I were kind of looking it up for this episode. You know, Martin Luther, of course. You know, he nailed his objections to the church door. The Boston Tea Party is one of my faves because everybody knows I'm a super nerd for American history. This was an act of vandalism. I mean, to put it mildly, it was really more sabotage. We have the suffragettes who marched and protested, went on hunger strikes when they were thrown in prison. One of them, I cannot remember her name, which I should know, threw herself under the king's horse during a race, died. You know, Gandhi picked up salt off the ground, and that was a protest given the state of things there. The March on Washington. And that was before there were economic boycotts. Stonewall, which was a straight-up uprising. I mean, there's been so much that people have done and that we can look to kind of be inspired right now in this moment. But to actually take action, that's what we're going to talk about today.
Well, and the thing that I've been thinking about in relationship to some of those examples is I think there's a way of thinking that says, look, we're facing down a Bond supervillain in Elon Musk and a wannabe Putin and Donald Trump. Does something with symbolic value actually ever matter? And think about the things you just talked about. Like, think about the Boston Tea Party.
Yeah.
You know, there could have been the person who said, well, actually, guys, they'll just bring in more tea and they'll just squash the thing. And 250 years later, the Boston Tea Party remains an enduring symbol, right, of rebellion, of not allowing taxation without representation, whatever may be. So I guess the lesson I'll just say at the start here is, like, whether it is, you know, doing something like picking up salt off the ground, whether it is mooning the queen, whether it is making signs, you know, like the raging Elon and J.D. Vance memes that are all over social media at the moment. There's ways that those things do matter, and that the expressions of those things represent something in the social fabric that says, we don't accept this. This is not us. This is not who we want to be. And in fact, we are rebelling, right, on various levels against the leaders who are trying to impose on us something that seems unjust. So I think for me, that's just from the start, I want everyone to see that, like, symbols and symbolic actions actually can have, like, legacy effects on things.
They matter. I mean, they matter a lot. Like, I mean, think about the civil rights movement, right? Like, segregated lunch counters and segregated water fountains were not the most pressing concerns facing the civil rights movement, but they were very powerful symbols. I mean, like, think about Rosa Parks just refusing to give up her seat and how that has echoed down through history, leading to the Montgomery bus boycott. Like, you don't know what is going to necessarily be a precipitating event at the time, but symbols are really important and can be really powerful. And some, you know, elements of originality and humor and stubbornness are all going to play a role in some of the things that we talk about. But it is, I think, key. I really like that these things can be more important than you know at the time, and that symbols can be really powerful when it comes to building resistance movements.
And I think they also just represent an ongoing sense of solidarity that,
yeah,
hey, I'm feeling alone. I'm feeling down. I'm doom scrolling. I'm not seeing good news anywhere. And yet there are ways in my online or kind of public cultural fabric that are throwing wrinkles into a system that's trying to flatten everything. And those are good daily minute by minute reminders to have. Like, we're not alone. Others are fighting. Others are not happy. Others are not accepting this. So I'm going to keep going.
So let's talk about a few of the options. And I do want people to, as you're listening to this kind of this menu that we're going to present you with, to one, realize that this is by no means exhaustive. And we want to hear from you what you're doing, what you've seen other people doing that has been effective. And we'll add to this menu, I think, as we progress in this movement. That's one point. But two, I would love you to figure out one or two of these that you could trade for some of that doom scrolling. Like, commit to trading 2 hours of the doom scrolling on your phone to doing one or two of these options each week. And I think you will start to find that it makes a difference in your life. So let's talk a little bit about kind of the Boston Tea Party type political resistance. Some of the more bold, the more forward thinking. They don't necessarily have to be that big, but maybe also a little, you know, skirting the edge of what would be legally appropriate. You know, one of the ones that I saw recently that I flagged was at the University of Cincinnati. Really simple. The university was putting up bathroom signs that were, quote, for biological men. And the kids just said, yeah, no, we're not gonna, and they went and ripped all of those signs down. Another one that was a suggestion, given what's going on at the Department of Education, was that one of those employees who's let go just delete the student loan database on their way out the door. You know, bigger lift, but I like it. I like thinking along these lines that are very much in the forceful protest vein, but nobody's getting hurt.
The thing I love about the University of Cincinnati example is, as somebody who spent a lot of time on college campuses as faculty and as a student, you know, those are really good examples of like ecosystems, like enclosed communities where you have an ethos. Like, you know, you've been on different campuses. They all feel different, right? The University of Wisconsin just has a different vibe mm-hmm. than the University of California, Berkeley. And I think when you have kids tearing down signs that are meant to be this like gender essential, essentializing trans erasure kind of thing, and people are just saying, no, we're not doing that, you're just setting a very like local micro tone of like, nope, we don't accept this as a community. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to fight you when we can, where we can. And we're going to be, you know, kind of in engaged in small scale guerrilla tactics that simply gum up what we take to be illiberal or authoritarian policies, things that are not fair or just simply downright violent and cruel against members of our community. We're just not going to stand for that. And I love that. I mean, obviously, so many of these things have come from college campuses mm-hmm. in the past. I'll just say that, like, I live in the Bay Area, and this just reminds me of like the rich history of activism at San Francisco State and at Berkeley, and the ways that like we wouldn't even have the term Asian American. We wouldn't even use that term if it had not been for a pan-racial, pan-ethnic student activism that set the tone for ethnic studies and the emergence of like so many of the things we talk about today when it comes to race, ethnicity, justice, inclusion, and so on. So all that to say, like, these things matter. And like, again, there's that devil's advocate that's like, well, what is tearing down the sign going to do? Who cares? The world's ending. It's all terrible. It's all done already. We've been defeated. Elon Musk is a supervillain. We can't compete. And it's just like, well, maybe and maybe not. And those little tiny things, like they matter, and they gum up systems that are trying to totalitize people's lives.
That to me is, I think, a key takeaway is it is not your job, listener, to defeat Elon Musk. It is your job to take one small step toward defeating Elon Musk, right? You are not going to beat, you're not James Bond. You're not going to beat the Bond villain, right? Like, you just do the thing that you can do to resist. And it's, if it is walking by that sign and ripping it down, that's good enough for now, right? Like, this is not your problem. It's our problem. And that's the point. We're talking about building a resistance movement here.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits apply to for 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
I love all that. And I will, we should also just do a little throat clearing too and point out that, like, don't do what the Boston Tea Party folks did and pretend to be Native Americans and, like, blame them. Don't dress up in costumes to do that, to blame a indigenous group that's, you know, not kosher these days. Let's avoid anything like that. But definitely rip down those signs or delete the student loan database on your way out the door and other things along those lines. Why don't you do this one? And I'll do an example. I got a good example, actually. I was just looking up.
Well, I was just going to say, I think one thing you just said earlier, I mean, you just said a minute ago, is do what you can do. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that makes people feel defeated is, like, some of y'all out there are just built to march, to protest, to be out in public, like, day in and day out. So I'll say, a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed Megan Kuntz and Tamara Kern-Simelis, who are folks who were there when Dr. Teresa Bornpohl was pulled out of the town hall in Idaho by the mm-hmm. Black Shirts, right? If everybody remembers this news story.
Oh, yeah.
And I had them on Straight White American Jesus. And I've met them. You've met them. They were up with us when we were both in Spokane at the meeting at the library there a couple of months ago, Andrew. And they are built for mm-hmm. this, right? Like, if you meet Megan Kuntz, you're awesome. You're like an extrovert who just wants to be, like, at the rally, at the protest, at the thing, holding a sign. And some of you are like, I'm not like that. I don't know how to do things like that. That seems just, like, not my jam. So, like, you can save five numbers, right? You can save numbers in your phone that you're going to call on a regular basis, who are your reps, other reps, your senators, your local leaders, your state assembly person. Who are the people that are going to be in your phone, who you're going to call on a regular rotation? And you can read off a script, right? You may say, I don't know what to say. I'm scared, what's going to happen? And it is simply that. And I can tell you that the reports we get, and mm-hmm. I think Andrew can probably speak to this more than I can, is that the staffers for those folks respond. Like, those things filter to the elected representative for in sure. ways that actually mean something. Like, more than the angry tweet you sent or the Facebook post you just posted, those phone calls end up in amalgamation, like, getting through to that elected representative. And there is a sort of filter that says, hey, people are pissed. People are mad. People are angry. You know, you've all seen the clips of the town halls that have, like, sent Republicans running scared. But, like, it may not seem like it, but calling Chuck Schumer or calling your local assembly person or calling your congressperson, it does matter when these things add up. And so saving those numbers in your phone, having just a regular, like, rotation of people you're going to call on a daily or weekly basis, whatever it may be, that's a thing. And you don't have to be that person who's built to go to, like, four rallies per week and one protest and a town hall. You don't have to be that in order to do something.
Absolutely. And you absolutely should be saving your reps district number. So that's where you live, right? Their home district number. So I'm in Madison, Wisconsin. So I have Mark Pocan's district number saved in my phone. And then I have his DC number saved in my phone. And then you should be saving your senator's numbers in your phone as well. And you can do both of those. I always like to call the district. It's a little, you're more likely to get through. You call, you say, I'm Andrew Seidel. I live in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm a constituent, and I absolutely oppose you taking over the DC budget and, you know, destroying a home rule, which is something that's kind of happening right now, possibly. That is all you have to do. The guarantee that the staffer will be polite, but this does make a difference. Okay, like, I have lobbied on Capitol Hill it's been a while since I've done that, but I work with a ton of people who've worked on Capitol Hill and who've lobbied. This makes a difference. This does make a difference. And as Brad said, it's the accumulation. And I'll tell you, you know, one call like this is an order of magnitude more impactful than your angry tweet or Facebook post. It it makes a difference when they get call after call after call. You've been in an office before where the phones are ringing off the hook. Everybody knows something is going on. And the question is, what's going on? What are people pissed about? What are people trying to reach us about? That gets communicated throughout the office. The representative or the senator is going to get a briefing about how many people have called to oppose something, how many people have called in favor of something. Right? We know that this works, and we've been, you know, the phone lines have been lit up in the first few weeks here, and it has made a difference. So definitely go find those numbers and save them in your phone. I highly recommend doing that. It's a really great way. And I would just say, do it one time. Pick something, anything, and do it one time, because once you do it one time, you realize how easy this is, and this is your right. This is a First Amendment right. First Amendment attorney here. Hi. Right. I'm not talking free speech. You have a right to petition your government for a redress of grievances. This is the modern version of that. You call them and tell them what they are supposed to do. Now, they may not do it, but it could also still have an impact there. Right. Maybe you're not going to change Senator Ted Cruz's vote, but if he gets 1,000, 10,000 calls about something, he may not oppose it. He may not oppose it vocally. He may shut his mouth on the floor. It could have an impact that you don't even realize. So please consider doing this. But let's talk a little bit more about the town halls, because this has been fun to watch.
The town halls to me show a couple things, Andrew. One of them is how many, I'm not gonna limit this to the GOP reps, but many GOP reps live in silos where they never encounter
for sure.
Like any kind of like dissidence or protest. You can see how sensitive they are. You can see the snowflake like melting at, like, you know, there's reps calling for SWAT teams and like protection. And I can't believe they were so mean to me. I mean, there's one rep who said, you know, y'all are just like the January 6th folks that showed up at the Capitol. It's amazing how easily they've been run off. But I want to say this too. I know you're going to get here. I want to say something preemptively about Democrats is like, you may feel like you have a rep who you really believe in or somebody that you like, you really appreciate. That's great. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and you're the lawyer. You tell me if I'm wrong, but we are living in a time where good is not good enough and where we have to like be the force that is pushing up the spine of every rep at every moment saying we are living under the threat of a fascist takeover. Yeah. It is not a moment for you to shrink. It is not a moment for you to relax. I don't know what Senator Coons, you know, Ro Khanna are doing, right? Voting for this or that. I don't know why I have to see Alex Padilla, one of my senators, voting for the confirmation of certain Trump picks. Theoretically, there's a lot of people out there that are like, oh, Alex Padilla, you know, California senator, right? And you start to look up what he's up to, and they need you behind them, reminding them that of what you just said, Andrew, we the people are served by you. It is our constitutional right, and you need to know where we're at right now, which is in a 5-alarm fire emergency. And so I don't care who it is. Like, I don't care who the rep is. It could be the, you know, AOC is, you know, whoever you want. You want to talk about Bernie. They need people constantly reminding them of what matters, of where we are, what's important, and they need to hear from you, period. And so I'm sure you want to get to that too, Andrew, and talk like that, but yeah.
Oh, I mean, I could not agree more. I think I like the way you, like, good is not good enough right now. We need people to be doing more. We need them to be raging for accountability. We want boldness out of these representatives. I don't want them to be good. I want them to be bold. I want action. I want creativity. I want to see some fucking fight from them. I do not want to see paddles and color coordinated outfits unless that is partnered with something bolder and smarter and more creative. And just telling them that you want that and calling and demanding it, right? That's helping create a permission structure for them to then go out and do something more. And the flip side of this is also true. Like, I know there are people who are listening who are saying, you know, my rep is Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? But I am in the reddest of red, the most Christian nationalist district that you can imagine. And to me, like,
good. Like, this is what Brad was talking about. You go, show up and let them know that they are not inevitable, right? That make them see you. Bring your friends. Make them uncomfortable in that really, really red district. You know, even in the reddest states in the country, you know, places like Wyoming and West Virginia, you know, we're still talking about 25%. One in four people are not voting red. That you are there. Show up and make your voices heard. They're not used to it. Make them uncomfortable. Go to their town halls. And if they're not having town halls, go to their other events. If they're not having town halls, go back to the number that you have saved in your phone, call and demand that they have a town hall. And if they're not going to, call them out. Call them out as a coward. Write a letter to the editor of your local paper, right? Just a short one. So-and-so is a coward for refusing to hold a town hall. Show up at one of their other events with a sign. This coward won't hold a town hall. It is a powerful message to suggest that politicians are afraid of their voters. I mean, that is something that is going to goad every one of these people into some kind of action. And as we were preparing this episode, AOC announced that she is willing to go to districts where these reps are too cowardly to have town halls. So you should reach out and let her know if you're running into these problems, and you get her to come have a rally. I think that'd be fantastic. So this, I absolutely think you're right, that this is not something that people should shrink from. And, you know, again, maybe this isn't the thing for you, but you can certainly get on the phone and call.
One more thing on this, yeah, which is, I think two things happen when you, like, let's say your rep is Marjorie Taylor Greene. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you've had enough, and you're like, I'm going to the town hall. I'm not the kind of person. And you know, I'm with you on this, if friend. Okay. I love doing this podcast. I love speaking in public, but by nature, I'm a pretty introverted person and I like to be alone. I'm not the kind of person who, like, mm-hmm, is just readily, like, in public all day, every day. Just so I get it. And let's just say you're the one who's like, you know what? I've had enough. I'm going to the thing. I don't know what good it'll do. I don't know what victory I'm going to win by doing this, but I got to go at least try. You know, the ancillary effect of that is you're going to meet other people who are holding the same signs and shouting the same things as you. And guess what? You're going to get scooped up into community, into networks, into people who are doing things. And I think one of the issues that I have seen across not just this country, but across liberal democracies as a whole, is democracy fatigue. Like, the institutions feel like they're petering out, like people don't believe in them anymore. And so when I see folks go to the Marjorie Taylor Greene, mm-hmm, event, or they go to some, you know, they go to their, like, state assembly person's event, where did the women I just mentioned where did Teresa Bornpohl get pulled out of? She got pulled out of a town hall in Northern Idaho where, like, all four or five districts of the state legislature are, like, deep, deep red. And yet Teresa Bornpohl's there sitting with Megan Kuntz, sitting with Teresa, and they've got a whole crew and posse. And you may be thinking, I feel alone. I feel like I live in this deep red district. They're trying to erase my existence. Being at those public events, if you can do it, will get you, like, into an ecosystem of others that feel that way. And the more people that are involved, the more chance we have it change. Because, like Andrew just said, you're talking, like, one in four people voting. Like, some of these, like, districts, these legislatures win these races on such abysmal turnout, right? And tiny, tiny turnout. The more folks that are in an ecosystem of participation, the more difference it makes. And I just think that's huge. I also say AOC, I am a huge fan of AOC. If you're listening to this for some reason, AOC, we love you and you should come on this podcast at some point. You don't need AOC to do this. Go get a little 3D dummy made of your rep, set them up at a podium, and then have everybody say what they want to say, videotape it. And this is great theater for the social media age. Go talk to whatever rep won't talk to you. Demonstrate visually that they are a coward, and there's people waiting for them, voters, who are absolutely opposed to the, like, destructive decisions they're making in the state legislature or in the Congress. You don't need AOC. Just go 3D print a dummy, put a mask on it, and do all the screaming you'd like to do at that effigy.
I love that. I love that idea. Let's just listen to one town hall real quick. This is Representative Rich McCormick, a Republican, making excuses for Doge. And let's listen to the reaction.
When you talk about presidential power, I remember having the same discussion with Republicans when Biden was elected.
So you don't even have to make a sign, right? You don't have to have an agenda. You don't have to be prepared. You could just go and boo when they say terrible things like this. They're not prepared to deal with crowds that don't agree with them. All you have to do is make your disagreement known, and booing can often be more than enough.
Cindy in our Discord today had this great example of like somebody in her community who's not the person who wants to make a sign, does not want to talk in front of everyone, does not even actually want to walk in a protest, like if you're walking in the street from here to there. So you know what that person does, Andrew? They make snacks like out of the wazoo. Like they show up at the thing and they've got snacks and food for everyone, and that's their contribution. That's the way that they help things go. I remember during the George Floyd protests, I had a like tiny baby at the time, so I could not always just like get out of the house and go march. But I would stand out on my street and we would hand out water, we would hand out right stuff, and it was just me trying to say, hey, I'm like holding a 4-month-old, but you know, we're doing what we can, and so those things matter too.
Yeah, you don't have to be necessarily that person that's on the front line. We can call it. Everybody on the front line needs a ton of support. You can absolutely be in that supporting role, and that is helpful, and that is work too. Let's also talk a little bit about a slightly different, but really kind of aligned with some of these or related, is you can volunteer to help beat crazy politicians in other states, especially now. And I hesitate to offer this one because, as you were just pointing out, people can be burned out. But this is something that's particularly useful in election seasons that are not the big midterms and not the big presidential seasons. So like right now here in Wisconsin, the beginning of April, you know, Wisconsin, the crucial swing state for the election, we have a Supreme Court race, the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And Elon Musk is spending at least $11 million, $11 million that we know of. Which is something like a fifth or a quarter of the total that is being spent on this race. And Musk's minion, a guy named Brad Schimmel, is outspending the normal candidate, Susan Crawford, by quite a bit. And I know Susan Crawford, not well, but you know, I am a attorney here in Wisconsin. I move in those circles and will be a far superior judge. And again, you know, not a MAGA or a Musk or a Trump minion. And you can volunteer to help in this race from anywhere in the country. You can be a virtual volunteer. So all you would just Google WIS Dems, like Wisconsin Dems, WIS Dems, virtual volunteer, and you'll get to the form. And then you can help defeat, you know, Elon Musk here in Wisconsin. And you'll be doing things like texting people, calling, sending out postcards, reminding people to vote. This is a Supreme Court election that is not tied to anything else. It's going to be a very low turnout race. And, you know, 10 votes here or there could make all the difference. So it's a chance to really have an impact and get your feet wet if you've never done any volunteering like this. I highly recommend it.
So I was up in the Twin Cities last year and just had a great time talking to the humanist group.
Oh, they're such a good group up there.
It was awesome. They're amazing. It was one of my favorite events. I went home. I told my partner, like, we're moving to the Twin Cities. I don't care if it's January. So someday I will be there, Twin Cities, because you are awesome. And, you know, I'm looking at you right now. If you're a Twin City humanist, I'm looking at you right now. If you are a, you know, somebody living in Berkeley or somebody living in just a like super, super safe, democratic stronghold part of the country. Okay. This is where you come in. Right. I've met so many of you at conferences, conventions that are like, yeah, I live here and this is my rep. And there's a lot you can do. Good is not good enough. There's ways you can push your rep. If your rep is AOC, blah, blah, blah. But one thing you can do is say, all right, it is not midterm season. It is not presidential race season. It is not national election season. There's a weird, for some reason, off cycle election. Why is Wisconsin having this now? Nobody knows, but they are.
We're weird.
Let's make sure as many people know about this as possible, right? Let's make sure that like the 20-year-old who cares about reproductive rights knows they need to go vote. Let's make sure, you know, the 32-year-old like mother of two knows I need to go vote. Let's make sure people actually understand what's going on. You can do that if you're a Twin City humanist or a somebody living in Berkeley or Brooklyn or wherever. And I think that's this message is for you, right? This is a time for you can say, maybe that's 1 hour a week I can do. Maybe that's 2 hours a week I can do where I'd be better served than doom scrolling or, you know, simply eating French fries under the duvet and being sad. This is a place where I can jump in.
Maybe you have one of those book clubs that's really like a wine club and, you know, you devote the next few meetings to everybody volunteering and doing this instead. You know, this is also, this is doable. Like Janet Protasiewicz ran for the Wisconsin Supreme Court a year ago and we won that race with a lot of outside folks volunteering their time and to help get out the vote. We beat another MAGA candidate, and that tipped the balance of power on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It made a huge difference, which helped protect not just abortion, but also election integrity, real election integrity, not fake election integrity here in Wisconsin. So it's a place where you can actually win. So definitely consider that. WISDEMS volunteer, virtual volunteer, Google that, you'll get there. I want to talk about malicious compliance because this is like one of my favorites. And we're going to play a short video. this was making the rounds, but to me, this was just a perfect example.
Hello. Thank you, Madam Chairman. As the Senate overwhelmingly voted yes.
You can call me Mr. Chairman if you want.
Well, I cannot be compelled to use your preferred pronouns as you have all voted.
Wait a minute. We're talking about preferred pronouns. A lot of people are. I prefer to be called Chairman French. That's my preferred pronoun.
I know. And you all voted that preferred pronouns cannot be compelled speech in SF-77. Anyway, my name is Britt Borrell, and I'm a
consultant. So this is in Wyoming, and they say that personal pronouns don't matter. And this brilliant woman who's testifying immediately puts it to the test and makes the chairman, chairwoman feel just wildly uncomfortable. Makes them feel their bigotry. It was really, really fantastic. And I'm calling this malicious compliance, and I think that's a fair label for it. This is where you conform to the letter of the law, but not the spirit, right? You obey the rules, but not with an intent to uphold those rules. You're kind of beating it into submission in a way. And there are some, you've probably heard about this in the workplace. There's a whole subreddit on this, it turns out. But this to me was just a fantastic example because it really made the bigots feel their own bigotry.
One of the videos I love on this, it's actually not in a setting of government or governance, but it's Charlie Kirk debating, you know, 20 young Gen Z folks. Mm-hmm. And one of the young men starts by asking him about God's gender. And he's like, well, God is a man, God is male. And he's like, okay, so God has a penis. How big is God's penis? And all of a sudden it's just like, what? I don't know. And you can see Charlie Kirk immediately is just like, how do I answer that? Does God the Father have a penis? How big is that penis? And, you know, what shape is it? And all of a sudden we're in a place of like highly uncomfortable. Right. And to me, what that is like, you're showing the system its incoherence and you're just holding up a mirror. And I think in some ways, this is, and I'm not going to take us off topic, I promise, and we're not going to get into like a history of the Cold War as much as I'd like to. In some ways, this has been Russia's strategy with the United States for the last, you know, 25, 30 years, is to say, you want everyone to be a liberal democracy. What about Abu Ghraib? What about Guantanamo? Like, they're sort of like, they hold up a mirror that reflects the hypocrisy and the cruelty of the United States and its empire. And, you know, that's a sort of example that could take us on a lot of tangents. The reason I bring it up here is we have a group of wannabe authoritarian Christian nationalists who are incoherent to the core, and the kind of like lack of center and the way it doesn't hold is clear to so many of us. So if you can find a way to hold up in front of them, like this woman is like, hello, Madam Chairman. And he's immediately like, well, I can't, what? I prefer to be called this. And she's like, well, you know, you said that that's not important. So deal with it, homie. And he's just like, what? You know, you can tell that, like, you know, Gerald in the video is just a little like, doesn't know what to do. So this is not only like effective, but like when you ask Charlie Kirk how, like, what does God's penis look like? You also just like, it just right out in the open.
Yeah.
Show the incoherency. And it's like hella fun. This is like so fun to do. This is super fun.
You have to have a subversive streak to do this, but you also have to, this is for the people who are like, you're into the reading of the rules and the minutia. Like if you're the kind of person, like, I'm going to read the game rules front to back and then I'm going to read them again just to be sure. Like this is where you want to be. You find a committee you can go testify, read all those rules over. So we've kind of had the extroverts, we've had the introverts, we've got like, and this one is for you. You got a subversive streak, this is for you. You got the, you read the rule book, this is for you.
You like to argue?
Yeah. What?
Like if you like to argue and you like to kind of like, you know, put things in people's faces, this is the one you want, right?
Yeah, you're just doing what they said. That you're doing what the rules say. It just happens to be that the rules make no sense and are terrible when you actually read them.
Exactly. Can we talk about running for office real quick?
Yeah, we can. We should.
So we've talked about introverts. We've talked about extroverts. We've talked about phone calls. We've talked about protests. We've talked about subversive, malicious compliance. Mm-hmm. Running for office is something that people should do if that is the kind of person you are. And you may not think you are that person. You may not think that, you know, you're not whatever, a Yale law grad or something. It doesn't matter. So let me read just a bit, Andrew, from a piece by my friend Tim Dickinson at Rolling Stone and the organization Run for Something. Mm-hmm. He writes, Run for Something is a progressive advocacy group launched at the beginning of Trump's first administration, and it encourages Americans under 40 to launch careers in public service. Through its recruiting endorsements, Run for Something is geared to help progressives win their first office, school board, city council, state legislature. So they are on a tear, and they have recruited, and this is from their one of their leaders, Amanda Littman, who's a co-founder, 27,000 people who signed up since Election Day. So since Election Day, 27,000 people.
Since Election Day 2024?
Wow. Yes. Wow. Yes. Under 40 have signed up to Run for Something. And friends, if you listen to my show, you know I never shut up about how Christian nationalists, fascists, etc., they go for every soft tissue in the body politic, right? Every ligament, every tendon they can find, county supervisor, dog catcher, PTA, school board, they're running. And a lot of times people on our side are like, what's the point? It doesn't matter. Oh, those things don't do anything anyway. I want to play pickleball. I have brunch. And it's like, Run for Something makes a huge difference. And you might be 28, right? Like I have my friend Mickey Dolenz in Oklahoma,
Mickey.
Is like a young state legislator in a deep red state. And Mickey's just fighting the good fight every day. And, you know, James Tallarico, I mean, I have interviewed folks in Idaho who are like 31 years old running in races they won't win, but it matters. And like this stuff matters. So I get fired up about this because I think this is
I am
huge.
Right there with you. And I'm going to address what I know some of our listeners are thinking right now. They have this doubt that is looming large in the back of their mind that is, I am not qualified. And I know this because this is one of the things that, you know, this always comes up in my talks. And I say this, and you can see that shadow of the doubt behind people's eyes when you tell people to run for office. It's, I'm not qualified. And the answer to that is, look at the other side. Look at Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and tell me again,
Lauren Boebert,
that you are not qualified to be in the United States Congress. They are not hung up on the qualifications. You are, if you are listening to this podcast, if you are listening to my podcast or Brad's, you are definitely qualified to run for office. That's number one.
Thanks for listening to the free version of today's episode. To get the whole conversation, unfiltered and unfettered, sign up at accessmundi.us. Costs less than that latte you bought on the way to work, and I am just as delicious. Signing up also gets you premium content from Straight White American Jesus and other Access Mundi shows. Try it. You can always change your mind because life is too good to waste on bad ideas. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.